Are we living the Lord of the Flies? Recently, Tim Gagline of Focus on the Family, the DC chapter, writes this. If we're to stop teenagers, and particularly young men, from reenacting the Lord of the Flies in our cities and towns, we need to reemphasize that children need to be raised in two-parent, intact families with both a mother and a father. Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. Tim Gagline is our guest. And by the way, let me just say a little bit about Tim. He used to work at the George W. Bush White House. Today he runs the Washington, D.C. chapter of Focus on the Family. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And Tim, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a real joy to be with you, Jerry. Thank you so much.
So it's my understanding that if you go to an average prison and you were to interview prisoners or just find out about their own family backgrounds, a large percentage of people come from broken homes. Fathers in the home, fatherlessness, or fathers outside of the home, I should say, fatherlessness is something that's bad for society, even though that doesn't fit the feminist narrative.
You know, we are, as a country, culture, and civilization, Jerry, suffering from a plague of fatherlessness. Family structure, by every single empirical data study, shows that the best and most healthy way to raise the rising generation of young Americans is in a home with mother and father. And we are facing the results of a 50-year experiment of the destruction of the natural nuclear family. And it has great ramifications, and it's very expensive because government very often at the federal, state, local, and regional level fills the vacuum of what historically has been the role of mom and dad and a strong family structure.
And the irony is that some of the government programs to try and address some of these maladies, in some cases, they actually exacerbate the problem by driving fathers out of the home.
They absolutely do, Jerry. And this is one of the real tragic ironies and one of the terrible legacies of the Great Society, because the whole promise of the Great Society was that there was going to be this great regeneration and great renewal, among other places, in America's inner cities. But what we see is that all of those data points have gone backwards. And one of the real tragedies here in Washington, D.C., is that the federal government actually incentivizes a father not to be involved and not to be in the home. Now, most people who operate on the idea and the goal of logic and rationality would say that the number one thing you need to do is to make sure that the biological mother and the biological father are actively involved and prayerfully actively working together to raise the next generation of young children whom they have brought into the world. But actually, state and federal government very often punishes the biological mother and father for being jointly involved in the active raising of their son or daughter. It's irrational, but it's where we're at.
So in other words, take the example of welfare. If you have a couple that is intact, father and mother, and they're receiving the government benefits, then the government will say, well, if dad is not in the house, we'll give more benefits. So people will go where the incentives are, but those incentives, in effect, chase dad out of the house. And so we're dealing with the results of that. Now, you use the phrase Lord of the Flies. So go ahead and tell people, remind people, what does that mean?
Yes, the Lord of the Flies was and is a classic of literature. And the narrative of Lord of the Flies is that we can take a large group of young boys and young men, and we can place them in an isolated area and hope that they will be able to healthily recreate a country, a culture, a civilization that is thriving. And what the Lord of the Flies, among other things, underscores is that when you knock out the building blocks of the way that we nourish and healthily raise young boys to men, that when you miss that step from boys to men to gentlemen to fathers, that you end up with enormous brokenness across generations. William Golding, who wrote that novel, did this in a very florid and powerful way, but it remains true. And I think that there are pockets of this extraordinary country where we are testing this proposition very diligently about what is the best way to raise the next generation of boys to men, girls to women. And of course, what we're seeing in light of the article that I wrote in this wonderful conversation is that too often we're incentivizing the wrong behaviors.
And just a couple of details about the novel. First of all, it dates back to 1954, as your article points out. He was a Nobel Prize winning author. And the novel and subsequent movie made from the book deals with a group of British boys who find themselves stranded on an uninhabited island with no adults. By the time the adults get there, you know, to rescue them, was it weeks later, months later, they have just reverted to utter savages. And there's even been some murder plus gangs. I mean, they boil down to tribalism is what it boils down to. And yet these were kids who grew up in the church and, you know, they probably could say they're our father and sing, you know, beautiful British hymns and so forth for the beauty of the earth and so forth while they were living in hell and creating hell. But it, in some ways, it's a great novel in terms of understanding what the Bible says about our nature, that we're all sinners.
I could not agree more. And, you know, William Golding, Flannery O'Connor, a number of our greatest writers, they often repair to the stark and kind of dystopian theme, not in any manner to kind of uphold that kind of narrative as an ideal, but rather artistically to show us what can happen when you knock out the legs of the building blocks of civilization. And The Lord of the Flies dramatically, and there are many other novels that do it well as well, Brave New World, 1984. But The Lord of the Flies specifically says something dramatic and powerful about what happens. You do not properly, if I may say, in the kind of moral ecology of a healthy country, when you do not pay attention to the proper way in which we raise boys into young men. And as William Golding shows, and Jerry, as you said so dramatically, what you do is you very rapidly descend from even a modicum of healthy civilization to a form of barbarism.
Yeah, and one quick thing before we get back into the family issue, but I think it's important to underscore that the founding fathers of America, to a man, said that, you know, human beings are basically selfish. We will do what is in our best interest. So the government that works best is government which protects us from our fellow citizens. And in fact, Federalist number 51, probably by James Madison, although they say it could have been by Alexander Hamilton, but Madison has the best bet on this one. Anyway, it says that if men were angels, we wouldn't even need government, but men are not angels. Not only do we need government to protect us from each other, you know, which is what they were lacking in Lord of the Flies, but we need government to be protected. The citizens need to be protected from the government, since the government is run by men and men are not angels. So it's really important to understand human nature. This is why the founding fathers and the Constitution and in so many of our institutions, they separated power lest any one person or small group of people accumulate too much power unto themselves. And the family, of course, the bedrock of society, and the founders knew that as well. What you're dealing with here is the pathology of the breakdown of the family. It's like the old statement, as the family goes, so goes society.
I could not agree more. That's very eloquently said. You know, we have a written constitution. Primarily, as you say, the primary architect was the great James Madison. We also, in our founding era, had what I think of as a unwritten constitution. and the unwritten constitution were the cultural mores and norms that underscored that era. And our founding fathers, and I may say our founding mothers as well, literally, they disagreed, Jerry, on the biggest things that there were. But the thing that they most and all agreed on was that you could not have freedom and you could not have liberty over time without virtue. And in the American experience, they were all very clear that if you want virtue, which is a fancy word for moral excellence, if you want moral excellence in the citizens, in the people, in the leaders, you have to unleash the underlying power of religion in the public square.
Right.
The public religion is not bad manners. It's a very good thing. And it provides the moral guardrails for the way that one generation passes off the proverbial baton to the next generation. And you quoted Madison. I'm very glad that you did, because we are not very far from the founding generation, but we are very far from what they envisioned for the role of marriage, family, and parenting as the bedrock of the greatest part of the American experience.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. In light of, let's say, the abortion decision, Roe v. Wade, which it's now been overturned, but for 49 years it did its damage, in light of the gay marriage decision and so forth, one could only wish, oh, founding fathers, why didn't you say, oh, by the way, this we the people thing, this applies to those who were born and those who were unborn. Oh, and as far as marriage, that's between one man and one woman. I mean, all those things were implied in that, you know, basically Judeo-Christian society.
Of course, yeah.
but today, you know, the,
by all means.
Yeah, it's just crazy the way these things have been reinterpreted. By the way, your article even begins and has some points about Philadelphia, just as an example of some of the crimes. Philadelphia, of course, is where the Declaration and the Constitution were written. But you talk about a 73-year-old man who was beaten to death with traffic cones by a group of young Philadelphia teens, you know, fatherless, broken homes, and it's just so sad. Where are the parents, asked the niece of the victim.
Jerry, you were mentioning our founding generation, and I very recently read a remarkable biography of Benjamin Franklin, and among the many other remarkable things that Franklin wrote, I think he encapsulated in one sentence the narrative of this conversation. He said, there is no freedom without order and no order without virtue. You know, if we are determined in some pockets of our beloved country to raise a generation of boys without the necessity of morality and the honor and dignity of what it means to be a man, if we are willing to test that proposition, then it seems to me part of it is Katie barred the door, because as the Lord of the Flies, exemplifies, and as the example, the tragic example of the old man, being beaten to death, there are implications, for erasing, the importance of the honor code and the idea of a gentleman in a country like ours. And it's a very thin line between civilization and barbarism.
No amount of money can heal the broken soul of a young person growing up without a father. So you write, focus on the family. Yeah. The website is FOTF.org. We have 20 seconds left for a concluding thought. Tim Gagline.
My concluding thought is that despite this time that we're in, I'm very hopeful. I believe there are millions of people who share our views and who want something better, and I am praying at Focus on the Family and working to that end. Thought and action together for a better generation.
Tim Gagline, thank you so much for being with us. All the best.
Be of good cheer. Thank you, Jerry.